So has anybody here got any questions for the panel they'd like to kick us off with? Ian, I know you're just back from AI conference in Florida. I mean, what were the things that you were seeing there?
That I went to the IA summit in Miami, and quite a few sessions I found. I was watching them and thinking, hang on, are we still talking about this stuff? An example would be a talk about visual design and how if you have a content page, you should have your content fill two-thirds of the page, not a third, with the rest being advertising. Now, I thought, well, hang on a minute. Yeah, that makes perfect sense, but I've been doing that for over a decade. Are there any new ideas in usability and user experience design, really? That's my question.
Unless anyone stops me, I'll keep picking this up.
Go for
okay,
it.
I'll pick it up. Yes and no. There's no such thing as a new idea. But what you know, what we've been, I think, constrained with in the last, leaving aside the last year or two, is a conventional paradigm, a conventional set of ways of doing things that, unfortunately, Udi, sorry, but the standard is set in a fairly arbitrary way by people like eBay and people like Amazon. So a classic one for us is, what's best practice in shopping basket or checkout processes? Well, Amazon's best practice. Well, hang on a minute, who made Amazon best practice? Amazon's only best practice because lots of people are used to doing it in that particular way. Is that the best way to do it? Maybe not, but do we have the opportunity to kind of experiment? Because when we experiment and move away from that normal way of doing things, then people start to have problems with it. So you have to go through that process of understanding, is something going to be better when people learn how to do it? And is the learning worth doing? And will they actually overcome that learning barrier? So again, back to basics, classic UCD process, test as you go, formulate solutions through that. But no, I mean, we encourage people in every project to try to think about how they do things differently, not for the sake of doing it differently, but for the sake of trying to find something better. And, you know, maybe one little idea comes through in every project that does something to that degree, and then everything kind of broadly falls into line with convention. But if we can keep making those incremental changes, then over time the paradigm shift. And things like the iPhone help, because they introduce new paradigms. But is the best way to, unlock a phone by sliding your finger right to left or whatever the bloody hell it is? I don't know. Has anyone tried anything different? So I think we've got to keep trying things differently, but be assured that when you've gone through that kind of good, solid UCD process, you come out the other end knowing that it's going to work. It won't find it too hard to learn, and actually it will be better in the long run.
In terms of new ideas, in mobile a couple of years ago, I saw a lot of people starting to talk about patterns, and they want to start applying patterns to everything mobile. And we took a lot of what we knew about HCI and designing web interfaces and applied that to mobile. And I'd say it's been moderately successful. And the iPhone, as he mentioned, came out, and it's completely changed the way people are looking at mobile UIs. And it's giving a lot of people, basically creative license to go try something new for a change, and that's been great. But there's still a lot of people who, I think, they'll cling to these patterns because it's easy, it's what they know, and it's really hard to just sort of take that leap and say, yeah, I'm going to try this and I believe in it.
Doesn't that mean we're all going to be taken unawares, though? Because we're at a point where, iPhone's a great example of a device that isn't really like a phone anymore, and it's more like a convergence device. Is it a TV? Is it a computer? Is it a phone? Does that mean if we're all sat, sticking to patterns, sticking to best practice, we're just going to design ourselves out of a job? We're not going to be designing the right stuff for the devices in the audience, which are coming, which are starting to appear and starting to come around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. I think you have to look at the devices that are coming. And recently we've been seeing a lot more to do with touch and haptics and accelerometers, so movement is starting to play a key role. There's no patterns for that. So we have to go and start just trying stuff out, see what works, and sort of record that and be willing to just kind of change it the next point moving forward. But there's a bit of a danger here too, because with the haptics and the gestures that are all becoming prevalent with the iPhone, there's patents surrounding those Apple gestures. So what we're starting to see is other manufacturers such as Nokia and LG and Samsung, they're all coming out with touch devices because touch is hot, but they can't implement the gestures in the same way. So the little pinch to zoom in and zoom out of a view on the iPhone isn't replicated across all devices, and they're having to come up with their own gestures for these. interactions, and that's going to cause some confusion for consumers.
Hi, I'm Lillian from Iris. I was just wondering if you guys, do you see accessibility and usability as two separate areas? Because it looks like what's happening now, we're getting all this new technology that's introducing all these new methods of accessing content. And should we pursue in terms of like finding new technologies to actually get hold of content, or should we carry on down the path of predictable kind of navigation and access to content? Because there's a bit of like a conflict at the moment. We either move forwards and actually educate the audience, or we kind of remain within what people know best, how to navigate and how to get what they need. Or
so do you see that as a sort of general problem of the audience just not understanding the new devices, and we've got to find a way of educating them, or specifically as an accessibility problem of, you know, these devices just aren't accessible?
Well, it's a bit of both, actually, because we are introducing all these new softwares, and obviously they all have, people are trying to basically take over the market with their own kind of idea of what should be the next level of accessibility or usability. So do you see that as a constructive kind of way? Do you think that we should establish some form of like standard for all, for the future of usability, if you like?
Nikki?
I'd just like to, in my opinion, I separate out accessibility and usability, and I separate out accessibility as, can the user actually access the content? Is there a barrier for the user? But just because something is accessible does not make it usable. And the same way around, the other way around, just because something is usable, it does not make it accessible. So I would say that we need to break down, where relevant, we need to break down the technology barriers for disabled users, but we also need to really understand usability for users across the board. And it's really interesting that people, accessibility tends to get lumped in as one chunk, and it's quite an interesting thing to actually sit back and say, well, when we're talking about disabled users, we're talking about a whole selection of different issues or different ways of interacting with technology. We can't just lump it up into one big category. So when we start looking at, is a site usable? Is it usable for someone who is blind? Is it usable for someone who is hard of hearing? Those are issues that are one step further from, can they technically access the content? So in my opinion, I would say that they are actually different. They are slightly different areas. Although in saying that, I take a usability approach to accessibility. So...
I think for me, accessibility is a hygiene factor. In fact, usability is a hygiene factor. Anyone who kind of has to really go out and make a case to say, that as a web designer or as a user experience specialist, accessibility. Nikki, don't take offence to this. Of course, is a real specialism, because we do need specialists to talk about it. It's kind of on the wrong track. They need to have it just as an underlying principle of design. So when you design with certain users in mind. What are those users' abilities? What means have they to access your content, be that technical, be that physical, be that mental? They all have to be considered. I mean, when you're developing a set of user personas that you're targeting an interface at, then they have to be in there. It's just basic hygiene stuff that's got to be there. And we'll, every project we do has a persona which is a search engine robot. Yeah, because you have to consider that as well. So they're all forms of accessibility. I mean, a classic case in point was we had a client who, I won't even name the industry for fear that they'll get recognised, but who wanted a kiosk. And we said, okay, so what accessibility considerations have you thought about? And they said, well, we're not going to make it for wheelchair users because we haven't got a wheelchair height one, and blind users can't use it anyway because there's no assistive browser technology on the kiosk, is there? And we said, well, hang on a minute. The environment that you're in is a very noisy environment. It's a very distracting environment. So everybody who uses it is going to be, to some degree, mentally impaired by that. So you have to consider that. If I leave my glasses at home and I'm a bit short-sighted today, you have to consider that. You have to consider the lighting in the environment in terms of contrast on screen. If I'm carrying a child in one hand, a screaming toddler, or trying to keep an eye on my possessions, which are down by my feet, I am I'm impaired as well, because I now have one hand to operate the device with. So those are all considerations that are accessibility considerations. And so for me, it's hygiene factors. Every design job is slightly different. It has a different audience, different focus. You've got to just build that into the design process.
So, I mean, that sounds, you know, like all we're doing then is just removing speed bumps, and that, you know, none of the people here are adding anything more. Does anybody want to come back on that? Do any of the usability people out there feel as though it's just a hygiene factor, or is there something more to what you guys are doing?
I think it is to a certain extent. I mean, user experience is a conglomeration of a whole bunch of different things, and it is usability, it's accessibility, it's universal access, it's user experience design, it's information design, it's information architecture. Usability will not solve all your problems. You can have a site that's really, really easy to use and still sucks because it's not engaging, it's not fun, the business model's not there, the content's not there. And I think it's really easy for us to all sit around and get our terminology confused. Usability will not make a bad idea good. Usability will not solve fundamental business problems. What it will do is it will make your site effective, efficient, free of errors. But ultimately, it won't solve all the world's ills. We have to look beyond usability. Usability is just one small part of a much bigger issue. Accessibility is just one small part of a much bigger issue. This is where the kind of the idea of user experience is coming together. It's pulling all these various parts to make a holistic experience.
You talked about some usability companies kind of going through the motions, but there being a sort of fundamental business problem. I mean, do usability experts have a role in fixing the business model?
The difficulty is now we're talking about being pigeonholed. I really strongly believe in small multidisciplinary teams. Teams that have user experience knowledge and usability knowledge and design knowledge and programming knowledge. And if you have a small multidisciplinary team, then yes, absolutely. If you farm parts of your design process out to experts that live in a very walled garden and have one very specific view of what's important about a product, then you're going to run into problems. If you go to an expert usability company that only care about whether things are efficient and not whether the business model is correct, not whether things are designed correctly, then you're going to get a very warped view. And you get this siloed form of design where you throw things over the fence to the next person down the line, and it's not a very good way of designing, frankly.
So somebody once described, user-centered design as the method, and you could use it to design absolutely anything. They said, I've been using the method to design my kitchen, and it works. Is that what you're saying then? That you just apply that method and you apply the method, but you can pour any different people you care to into the mix?
No, not at all. I don't believe in process. I'm very kind of anti-process. A lot of agencies will have a set process, and they will have a set series of steps that they follow on every single project. And you can't treat interactive design as this kind of sausage factory kind of cookie cutter approach. Every single project is different. Every single client is different. Every single set of users is different. You need a set of tools that you can pull on. And you need to create your process around, whatever the needs of the application and the users and the client is. So I don't think there's, one process to rule them all or one methodology to rule them all. I think what you need is very, very smart, very, very multi-skilled people who can, get the design insight and understand how to fix these problems, outside of process.
I think what I'm mainly missing is for me, user-centered design, more than a discipline or a process, it's a philosophy. A company could be user-centered or not user-centered. Whether they have a user-centered design department within it or not. What I'm missing usually is, because the discipline is quite young, we don't have enough people that came from user experience and became product managers and became strategists in the company. So what happens is if you have such a department, sometimes it's a bit low level, and you need people to take the vision. And I think an example, and going to Ian's example before, about what's where is innovation? And I'm not talking about the iPhone, for example, the iPod and Nike work. I don't know if people are aware of the kind of a cooperation between them to make a fabulous system, actually, that records all your sports activities and works with the music, and you can download music from other runners and compare the results. This is about someone coming from a higher level of understanding of strategy and business and branding and user experience and starting playing with these elements together. And that's what I want to see more of between, you know, the company and the industry.
Is there anybody here? Oh, yes, please.
Hi. I just wanted to, this is all very high level, I just wanted to get down to a little bit more of the nuts and bolts. I just wondered where the panelists put most effort into setting up usability tests. What were their worst fears in setting up a test? And also, if the panelists could share their favourite horror story of setting up a usability test.
What do you mean by fears of setting up a usability test?
What do you think is going to go wrong? Where do you put your most effort? Fears is probably the wrong word. Where are you putting your most effort when you set up a usability test? Is it selection of your subjects? Is it setting up your subjects? Is it the time you're actually putting usability?
I think a lot of people treat a usability test like a very, very rigorous scientific study. And when you're doing a very, very rigorous scientific study, you want to try and make sure that you've got this perfect, pristine environment that is completely free of contamination, because you want to write a paper in a scientific journal and you don't want it to be ripped apart by your colleagues. And I see a lot of large usability companies that treat usability as a university scientific study, a postdoctoral thesis. And I do not think that this is particularly useful. I think the best way to do usability testing is to take a very guerrilla approach. We're not talking about doing usability tests here that are very high in statistical validity. We're not talking about taking a lot of sort of data, large sample sets of people to make sure that the confidence intervals are correct. What I want out of usability tests is design insight. So, I would much prefer to do two or three very short iterations of maybe five or six test subjects in a cafe that takes a day long, and, the test subjects are close to your personas, but they're not this ideal kind of demographic, than spending a lot of time researching, going through Mori to select, a sample set of 50 people and running a test over like 2 or 3 weeks to end up with, very little in the way of design insight. I think guerrilla usability testing is definitely the way to go. Don't be afraid of usability testing. It's not going to bite you. It's not science. It's design. There is room for summative testing. There is room for testing at the end of a project where you want to set statistical baselines, where you want to get, you want to set a baseline so you know when you test again, you've got, within a 5% error, ratio that your information is correct. But that's not the kind of testing that most of us want. Most of us want to just quickly check to see whether design is valid, check to see whether our assumptions are correct, find issues, find problems, resolve them quickly, and iterate and iterate and iterate. And you can do this on 5 or 10 test subjects quite easily.
So has anybody out there, taken a more kind of scientific approach? Anybody want to come back on that and say, well, here's some experience of, something which was more kind of set up and where there was a unique insight? You were reaching for your mic earlier.
For me, going back to the question, it's not about the science of it. It's basically give me a user for an hour and I'll have a good chat with him. That's what it is for me. And in that sense, my main worry is that the person is going to be in the right place. And I'll give an example for eBay. We're just planning testing now for the motors section of the site. And we want to find people that are looking to buy a car. And apparently, if you're looking to buy, if you are just looking into it maybe 2 months before, that's a completely different level than you're actually looking for it in the week before. And what happened through your mind is a different process. So, for example, I need to get the people in the week or 2 weeks before they're actually going to make the purchase. So recruitment is going to be the biggest thing for me. Once I have the right people, I'll have a chat. I'm not that worried about that.
I'm going to chuck that back at you then. What are your biggest fears around setting up a user test?
Well, I don't have a mic, so I'll have to shout.
Okay.
I was actually more interested in the horror stories and more in the degree of effort. I mean, when you were saying it was test subject selection, that was much more.
Oh, you just want to laugh at us.
I also want to laugh, yeah. But it's the selection that was interesting.
or how about a group of six-year-olds having to test a little e-learning project? You've got to create a completely comfortable environment. You can't use any kind of lab setup. So you don't want them to feel like they're being tested, or you don't want them to feel uncomfortable. So invite a group of six-year-olds around to your home with like parents, or go to a nursery school and try to do some user testing in that environment. That is probably quite on my hit list for more challenging experiences.
So, right, here we go. So the first one would be, how would you like to try and convince 26 people to reveal their online bank accounts to you and let them video you doing that process? And I know, we work with Fovience on a project for a bank where basically they managed to convince 26 people to do that for a very nominal sum of money, to take them through their entire online bank accounts and their innermost personal finances. And it was very successful, actually, but anyway. The best horror story I have, I'll get to it in a minute, but I think the points about Guerrilla usability testing are absolutely key, because if you're going to have a process, and it is a process, and you do have to go through this process of validating design as you go, you can't do it if every time you expect to validate you want to walk into a lab with 20 people in there. You just can't. It's financially unviable. You just can't do it. So you have to find ways of doing that and find as representative users as you can. So either that means going completely guerrilla and arriving in an environment like an airport terminal, for example, if you're looking to test a check-in application on a kiosk, and standing at check-in desk and queue-combing people to say, instead of checking in there, come and check in over here and doing on a Wizard of Oz prototyping or paper prototyping with them, which is incredibly insightful, because those people are absolutely in the moment of doing that thing and you can't replicate that. So for me, that's really important. So by the time you get to the big lab, you should be walking in knowing pretty much you've got it right. So I don't have any big fears, unless they manage to recruit a bunch of people who are just not target audience, and that's probably the biggest fear, is that it's just aimed at the wrong people. So the best story I have is when we worked on a very well-known department store. We did the first version of their e-commerce site back in 1999. And the thing was very successful in terms of passing all the design hurdles along the way. And then some bright spark decided to sit the CEO of the company down in front of this thing. And the first thing he says, what are all those grey bars down the side with arrows on? And he goes, well, they're scroll bars, so you have to scroll up. I don't want those. And we basically then spent the next 3 months redesigning it to have no scroll bars. So that was a bad move on somebody's part. So.
Hi, tonight's title is Real World Usability. And I just haven't heard anything about what all this costs. My name's Catherine Corey. I'm a consultant and I work quite a lot with McCann Erickson, who are a traditional advertising agency, who are sort of exposing themselves to the world of digital, but they've got to kind of respond to clients, and they've got to justify absolutely every line of everything that they do, and saying, well, you know what, we've got to do, it's only a 25K project, so, you know, we've got to justify why we're doing usability testing. We've got to justify why we would kind of spend a lot of time on QA. We might just be doing banner advertising. What most, I don't know, I'm going to speak for quite a few people here, is all of this sounds wonderful. You know, in my kind of nice world of idealism, I'd love to do all these things. But generally speaking, I haven't got a budget for it. I have to do it on maybe online using something like Usability Exchange for accessibility. I have to try and find as many different ways as possible to make these sites or banner adverts or whatever it might be as usable as possible, as quickly as possible, deliver them to deadline, deliver them to budget, and for the client to be happy, and for them to work. And I just don't see any of this kind of real world. This is the real world that most of us have to kind of deliver to. So I just like some ideas as how, what should I be doing?
Udi, eBay is just chucking its money away on usability, isn't it?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think I thought the same, even being from a consultancy background. I think that if you want to develop something, and we all need to kind of start practicing what we preach for. So if we think usability testing should be an integral and frequent part of any product development, this couldn't come up with a price tag of £15,000 for talking to 12 users. It just can't happen. And I think that this this business model is not viable anymore. And I think that I had the same problem as you. So within 3 months, I needed to do 4 or 5 rounds of testing within the design. And again, saying £40,000-£45,000 for that part of the research, it doesn't make any sense. And for me, the usability consultant is an agency, needs to move towards a round of usability testing is a 3-day thing. It's 2 days of testing and 1 day to list of bullet points of what the issues are with the priorities and move on. And the what you need to... The premium cost should be for the whole user-centered design life cycle, and for the design part of it, and for the innovation part of it, and for getting out to users and meeting them, and these are the things that should be the premium services, not the actual testing. Testing should be kind of thrown in whenever is needed.
I'd like to try and give you some practical advice. Basically, usability testing doesn't have to cost anything. It's really, really cheap. It's really, really simple. You can recruit via your friends, your colleagues, mailing lists, notice boards on your office or your shared office space. You can get recruits really, really cheaply. We use Twitter. We use, you know, various kind of social media tools, Facebook, to recruit test subjects. You can pay them £20. You can pay them a box of chocolates or a bottle of wine. You can get them in for a day. You sit them down for an hour. You set a series of tasks yourself. You record the results, you monitor what they're doing, you get feedback, you flow that into the design process and you iterate. It can literally be as quick as a day's worth of work. You can do it yourself, you don't have to employ a usability lab or a set of usability experts to do it for you. As long as you have, you know, a reasonable process set up and a reasonable set of, you know, goals and tasks, you can do it yourself.
I want to give you a chance to come back on that, and goodness knows where the microphone is, so I'm just going to blather for a bit while the microphone kind of finds its way to you. But is there an answer for you anywhere in there?
Transport industry.
I mean, that's kind of an answer. But
can you just repeat which industry you're working in?
So I work in a traditional advertising agency. I'm a consultant, and my biggest client is a traditional advertising agency, and I have a very user-centered user approach to all the work I do. But we've got, first of all, a recruitment issue. All of you saying you need specialists, or you've actually the training.
I'm saying anyone can do it.
But you were also saying how small specialist teams were key to how you approached the design process. Is that right? I couldn't quite understand, because one of you said that the process was key, and the other person said process wasn't key. I'm a bit confused as to well.
In the context of what we were talking about, I'd say you are the specialist. So you just said, I take a user-centered approach, I'm doing the right things. What you want is validation and testing of your work, yes?
Not of my work. I just have to justify everything to a client. So a client... When you're in a sort of position where you've got to persuade, first of all, clients to even do digital, I mean, that's the number one issue, not about usability. You've got to persuade them that they should be online, they should be doing mobile, they should be sort of doing all these different things. That's the primary kind of persuasive bit. Then you've got to think, well, what's their budget? Their budget is actually, because this is the first time they're going to be doing something, it's going to be quite small. Because they just want to dip their toe into the water. They don't want to kind of, you know, spend a lot of money here. So if you've then got a small budget, you've then got to kind of use that as wisely as possible. You have to have good designers in place. And there's not that many good designers around. Honestly, if you're sort of doing this from scratch, this is really hard. And what I'm not getting is... This is a very high level, sort of wonderful. I love it, you know, it's fantastic. But on a day-to-day, run-of-the-mill, 10K, 15K, 20K project, I don't quite see what I should be doing to kind of improve what we're doing already, or any sort of practical sort of ways of looking at things. That's what I'm not getting.
So does guerrilla usability testing mean anything more than recruiting users on the cheap? Are there other ways of finding the information? What is the user in part in user centered design?
Trying to address your question. One of the ways we try to do it is actually going back and kind of doing a bit of play acting in personas, and we'll try and figure out who the users are. And before we even talk to them, So we have a pretty good idea, you know, if we're dealing with a 16-year-old girl who's going to be using our service or product. And, you know, it sounds kind of silly, but you kind of ask the designers while they're creating these experiences to actually pretend they're that user for a bit.
I'm going to come on back on that. Basically, because this is a big traditional advertising agency. So you've got the brands you're working with aren't about persona-driven. They are, say they're MasterCard, yeah. Who are your... The users will be anyone who has 18 plus and has a credit card in their pocket. That's your user. That, you know, trying to get a persona from that is my everyday struggle.
Try and get... Okay, so who here shops at Tesco or has ever shopped at Tesco? Go on, yeah. Put your hands up if you shopped at Tesco. Right, everybody in the room. So when we faced with a design task to redesign Tesco.com, and we said the right way to do this is to take a persona-based approach to user-centered design, they said, you're absolutely right. Here we go. Right? And then defining the personas, that's really bloody hard, because they say, oh, everyone shops at Tesco except the Queen. Right? But then you break it down, and you know, the cleverness is around building the traits into the personas that are relevant. So I can't think of an ad agency that would dare say that it didn't consider its audience when it was placing creative. They would all absolutely say, I absolutely consider my audience. So that you're already working with the bare bones of user-centered design. The question then is about demonstrating the value of aiming at a specific individual rather than the generic type. So rather than Sally Spender, who's got a BART card in her pocket, who wants to spend the three, why not introduce them to Joanna so-and-so who lives in a certain place and has some very specific challenges for MasterCard and for the message they're trying to get across built into it. And that is not a big shift of mindset. It's sometimes difficult to sell, but then the trick is then finding the... I guess the examples or the metaphors to use to sell them on that process. And there's one I use around product design, which happens to be about radios. It's completely irrelevant to anything that anyone ever does. But when people see that and you say, look, which is the better of these two things? And obviously it's a subjective judgment. And then you kind of distill it back and say, well, okay, change the question. Which is the better of these two things for this person? And then introduce them to that persona and so on. And very quickly they start to understand that these two people that we're targeting these two very different products at are the same social class, the same age demographic group, they're ostensibly the same in terms of a marketing profile, but they obviously have very different behaviours or very different needs. And then it starts to sink in. And if you can design the persona well enough, you're building all those challenges in, then actually... You know, even the most hardened of ad agency creative directors will get that, I think. You might have to work at it, but... and then the other bit is, you know, the guerrilla usability testing is the key thing. It's just turning around somebody who doesn't work on that project and saying, what would you do with this? That is as good as pulling someone off the street to do that. And you should be doing that, you know, every 10 minutes. Not so, every 10 minutes, but anyway.
So there's a bunch of things there. Can I summarise that back? You've got, on one hand... You work in an environment where there is market data, there is audience data, you know something about the people that you're
dealing
with.
Sometimes you know too much, so that's the problem. So there's, you know, all the wrong things. Lies, damn lies, and market research and all that. And the trick is crystallising all that research into the things that are useful. Yeah. So there's loads of stuff that you will gather as market research that is just not useful in designing the thing that you've got to design. It's not relevant. You know, some of it can actually be very distracting. And often a lot of it focuses on current behaviour, not the behaviour you want to influence or suggest to someone. So you do have to kind of step back from that and create a persona that crystallises the important bits of that that affect your design decisions.
Okay, but I know our audience member wants to know some real-world usability. So we're saying, look, there is some stuff out there you've got your hands on some user data. It may not be the right user data because there's another thing. This is interactive media. And you need not just to know where the user is, you know, demographically, but how they behave, how they interact with the product and the medium, and that's the behavioural part.
Yes, behavioural cohorts,
and that's the extra
Tesco
stuff.
Might call it. I mean, Dunnhumby, who broke down all of Tesco's, loyalty card data, have invented it. Well, I don't know if they invented it, but anyway, they talk about behavioural cohorts, which are people who behave the same but essentially look to be very different. So, you know, what you need to do is take those behavioural cohorts, take the social demographic, the age, the geography, all that kind of stuff, and build them into personas that are useful. There's no point having a persona if it's not useful. But, you know, it's a basis, it's common sense. I mean, the only one challenge I'd leave you back with is you know, if the skills aren't there within an ad agency who are doing digital to really focus on these things, then maybe the ad agency has got its focus wrong to some degree and needs to start building those skills in. Yeah,
That's the issue. It's not that we don't want them. It's finding them.
Okay, no, that's
you know, and I think there's a massive skill shortage, which you know Tim Weiger's addressed in previous kind of stuff. So,
okay. I just want to wrap that one up and move on. We've got another question down here.
Hi, I'm Lucy Dodd. I work in house. Once you've done your kind of testing, you've worked with the design team and the information architects and the project managers and basically everyone, how do you then get your suggestions, recommendations acted on? Because quite a lot of the time in-house, you get quite a positive nod and then that's basically it. Nothing really happens despite moaning and stalking the people that you've... that this project is being developed by, they don't really do it because they're quite close to it and it's their baby and they don't really want to change it, or they don't really believe you, even if you have interviewed, you know, 20 plus people.
Okay, how can you convince somebody that they need to change?
I think a lot of it is about culture. If you've got a culture of usability and accessibility and people understand the importance, then it's really, really easy. However, I've been to a lot of user experience and usability conferences where the kind of questions that you and the previous lady asked really are the kind of tip of everyone's sort of tongue. There's all these kind of experts saying, you know, we work in a small kind of multidisciplinary team and this is how we do it. And the question is, well, that's great, but how do we bring this into our company? I don't think there's any, you know, there's no right way of doing it. There's no sort of, you know, golden bullet. It is just about slowly getting this culture ingrained in your company, in your organization. And I think this is one area where I do actually think formal usability testing is quite good. I do think generally it's a bit of a waste of money, but if you can try and get your designers and your developers and your managers witnessing user frustration by taking them into a usability testing lab and seeing the frustration that the things that you have created or they're creating causes gives you so much more ammunition. And a lot of the time, you know, it's difficult being a designer because our bosses think that we're geniuses and the thing that we create will work first time out of the gate. This very rarely happens. And if you can explain to your show your business, you know, your bosses, that it's an iterative process and we'll get close to perfection, but we'll never quite achieve it. And so getting them in a room and seeing people struggle, suddenly, you know, the kind of, it makes a lot of sense. And in that instance, I think formal testing is good.
I'm interested, has anybody out there got experience of, you know, taking that user-centered design approach and getting it taken on by a culture, getting it on, you know, taken on by a skeptical organization? Has that ever happened? Yes, at the back. Oh,
Yeah, hi, I work in-house well, and I was the first usability specialist hired by the company that I work for. And so I have done that job of kind of educating the rest of the team and getting them to come along to testing, and they really now do understand the value of it. I've worked there for about a year and a half now, and their mind change is amazing. Yeah.
So what happened? What was the sort of, you know, was it a road to Damascus moment, or did you need to just chip away at them until...
Chipping away, definitely chipping away, and nagging. I think that's the benefit of working in-house, is you're there every day sitting next to them, nagging at them all the time.
So you just need to stalk a little longer, I think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's easier. I used to work in agency side, and it's harder when you're not there all the time to nag.
I'd add another tip, actually, and I totally agree with the showing user frustration one. A piece of video can work wonders. And that department store I talked about earlier, the CEO was initially shown a video of a guy trying to buy a pair of socks from the site and failing to do so. And but the point then is that really what he related that back to was profit, because failure to buy a pair of socks meant failure to buy a sofa at £3,000 a go and failure to buy all sorts of other things that would make him money. So the absolute other tip is relate everything back to the company bottom line or whatever its objectives are. Conversion, sales, profit, margin, all those things are absolutely key. Because if you can say, by doing this, I will save you X or I will make you X more money, that is an argument that nobody with a half-decent commercial head-on will argue with.
Just, you know, from my experience, working with clients and talking to other people who are working in-house, it seems to be a kind of a three-year process from, you know, or let's give this a go to it's the way we do things, and it isn't a kind of an overnight thing, and a good place to begin is with a project that isn't somebody's baby and that doesn't have somebody clinging on to it going, I've spent 3 years building and working on this and I don't want some user coming in and telling me that it's all wrong. So if you can find those those side projects and show a little bit of success, you know, somewhere, you can start to build momentum. But you know, like pushing a truck, you know, it starts off slow and then it becomes unstoppable.
So I just want to add to that. Something to try that could be quite an interesting experiment within your company, and something I've heard of companies doing quite successfully, is when you've got someone that is a designer on a project and they can sometimes get a little too close, it can be quite useful to actually swap designers and swap projects. So essentially what you do is you have someone that starts off on a project and then you swap out for another designer. And I'm not saying that they lose focus on the client or the brand or anything like that, but it allows them to sort of break away a little bit and to give a bit of a fresh input into the design and a slightly different take on it. So that can be an interesting way of breaking people's complete attachment to their baby, to their pride and joy.
One last thing when dealing with designers and focusing on usability is get involved earlier in the process while they're doing wireframes or prototypes, and sit down and do the usability testing at that stage too before they're too attached to their overall design. Then you're probably going to get them more receptive to coming back to you to refine it later as you start doing the formal testing.